I would like to introduce our first speaker, Sarah L., from the Step by Step group of the West Side area of NA.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
So I have my phone here so I can check out the time because, I don't know, I get a little obsessed about that. So I'll try to stay on schedule because I know we have a main speaker at 7. That's kind of important. So the triangle of self-obsession. Well, first, thank you, committee, for asking me to speak here. It is an honor. I almost wasn't going to make it to this retreat. We were going on vacation next week for a week, and we weren't sure if we wanted to be away 2 weekends. It would actually be 3 weekends. And then I, you know, got the ask, and I was told to say yes when people in NA asked me to do something. And that kind of made my decision. I was up here for the weekend, which I'm really, really grateful because this is my home area. And there is nothing like being in your home area. Like when you move in recovery and you go to different places, it's never quite the same. Like there is this level of desperation that I had when I came in that I'm sure all of you can relate to that I didn't have when I moved to a new area that didn't make me as desperate to make connections and talk to people and, you know, get a good sponsor and work the steps. And so then I moved to another area, and I love the area I'm in right now. It is amazing. I have a phenomenal sponsor. As people say, I have the best sponsor. I have the best home group, and I really do. But it's still like there's something about coming home, and which is somewhat hilarious for me to say because my husband always makes fun of me in the sense of he grew up in Altoona and he loves Altoona. Like he goes home and he's like, don't you want to move back there? And I say, no, hell no. And I grew up in Patton, PA, which is like 30 minutes away in a really small town. And I have no desire to ever move back there. I really wish my mom would move away from there so I never have to go back there. Like that's just how it is for me. Like it was never home. But this area, and when I came into NA, that was when I found home. And it will always be my home from then. So the triangle of self-obsession was probably one of the first pamphlets that I think my sponsor had me read. That and self-acceptance, which just happens to be, you know, another topic today. And it's really about, you know, of course I had to go back and read through it, but we didn't have it at my home group, which I was really upset about, so I'm going to have to make sure we have it next time. But I pulled it up on, you know, the wonderful smartphone that we have nowadays and read through it to kind of refresh my memory and, you know, take a look at where I was and where I'm at now compared to when I read that the first time. And it's really about perspective and how we look at, like, our past, our present, and our future. And when I came in, I was in that triangle of self-obsession. You know, I definitely had resentments. I didn't think I had resentments, but over time I've added resentments that I've had to overcome. And I had a lot of anger. My anger was more that anger turned inwards. I was very depressed. And then my entire existence was fear-based. It was fear of anything and everything, and fear of you guys. When I came in, I didn't talk to people. You know, someone used to joke that I didn't say hi to them for the first like 3 months that I came to meetings because I was afraid. Like, I was afraid of you and I was afraid of me because of the expectations that I put on myself. And so when I was thinking about this, one of the themes that kind of kept coming up in my mind, and for me, that like resentment that's probably was without knowing it was a resentment until I got clean and started working on myself, was one that was there since I was born. My parents separated before I was even born. I was the third child, and my dad cheated on my mom. You know, it was back in 1980, and this stuff was odd. Like, divorce wasn't as common as it is today. And when they got divorced, she moved us halfway across the country to Patton, PA. And there's you know, there's some stuff around that, some like deep resentment around abandonment and feeling abandonment from my dad, because like feeling when I came in that I was not good enough for him to stick in the relationship, that I wasn't good enough, even though I wasn't even here, for him to stop the side piece and stay with my mom. Resentment against my mom for not trying harder. You know, like all of those things were there. I just didn't really know about it until I started working on myself through the steps. But that abandonment part became kind of like key to my story and like how I felt through my life and why I started to fear a lot and why I started to have a lot of depression, I think. You know, just always being afraid that more people will abandon me in my life, that the relationship will abandon me, which, like, probably my first serious relationship, you know, abandoned me very shortly into it for someone else. And even my sponsors, you know, my first sponsor abandoned the rooms of recovery because she didn't think she needed them anymore. And then my second one abandoned the rooms of recovery because she didn't need them anymore. And so, like, all of those things kind of helped me in a way to really start addressing that initial abandonment and that initial resentment. Because without those happening in my life, I probably wouldn't have realized that it was such a big deal to myself. You know, I wouldn't have realized that I needed to figure out how to have some acceptance, that I could not control other people, and how to have some love right now so that I could, you know, take care of myself and have love for myself that I could then give love to other people, and how I could have some faith that even when that did happen, it wasn't going to, like, destroy me. I could keep taking a step forward, and I could keep recovering in this process. For me, books outside and literature outside of NA has also been key to my recovery. And one of the first pieces that really helped me get that acceptance around abandonment and around my parents was this book by Iyanla Van Zandt, where she talked about, she sent a letter to her son in prison, and because her son was like saying how she was such a bad mom, and you know, because she never had a consistent relationship and she had all these issues, that she was a bad mom and that, you know, she was his fault, that was why he did what he did. And she wrote back to him and she said, you know, I was the vessel that brought you into this world, but that is really ultimately it, in a way. Like, I gave you everything I could give you at that point in time, and I did the best I could at that point in time. And the way that she worded it and the way that I, like, really looked at it was, gave me that acceptance around those resentments, because I know now that my mom and dad were doing the best they could at that time. They didn't have anything more to give to each other. They didn't have anything, you know, they didn't have a way of staying together just for me. Like, how self-centered that they should stay together just for me. You know, I've seen what happens in relationships where people stay together just for the kids. They end up just as bad, trust me. And so, like, really coming to this, like, place of empathy and place of acceptance that in any given moment, whoever I'm interacting with is doing the absolute best they can. Like, they're giving me what they're able to give really helped me, like, deal with that, the moment when I'm having relationships with people, and then also, like, that fear that everyone in my life is going to disappear, because the reality is, all we have are, I think the speaker last night said, all we really have are moments, you know, and that's it. And that is good enough, and that is great, actually, because I can have a moment with someone and then maybe they disappear from my life. But that memory and that, like, positive thing that they gave to me is really important to continue on. You know, a big, like, kind of awakening for me too with that relationship of my parents was my wedding. I did not have my dad give me away. I invited him, but he wasn't really the male figure in my life growing up. That was my brother. And I told him that in advance, not that specific part, but I said, you know, I'm going to have my brother walk me down the aisle, but I really do want you to be there, and I want to do the father-daughter dance with you. And he took it okay. He didn't really say anything. But at the wedding, like, he cried with, like, it wasn't like tears of anger or anything. It was tears of joy at seeing where I had come in my life and what I had accomplished and the woman that I was and that I am still becoming. He cried tears of joy. And one, it made me realize that my emotions I get from my dad, which I never realized. But two, to know that there is, like, there's this immense love there that he really has at every given time been trying to give me everything he can in that moment. So that was really, really key to me. The anger part and the anger turned inward, that was a lot longer of a struggle, or a lot longer isn't the right word, like more intense of a struggle. Like, that is what I have addressed through the solution of the steps. You know, I did not come here through rehab, I came here through psych centers. And, you know, twice tried to kill myself. The third time was for cutting, and it was when I was actually clean. So that is totally anger turned inwards right there. Those didn't help me at all. You know, yes, I have a chemical imbalance in my brain, and when they got me on the right meds, that did help a little bit. But I had to, like, work on myself and work on that self-love to get to a point where that was not my thought every day. You know, my thought wasn't how much I hated myself. You know, it was really, like, as I was, like, listening to speakers today and kind of going through my day, like, in all reality, and to be quite honest, and I'm not sure how much chemical imbalance and how much, you know, self-obsession and whatever it is, triangle of self-obsession is, but there are still days where I have a thought, just like most people have thoughts about using, where I have a thought that it would be so much better if I was not here. And that happens. You know, I can be driving, and it'll just come into my mind, and then I let it go. And I do just like I do with the drugs or with thoughts of using. And I tell God or my higher power to take it. And I have faith that I'm going to be able to continue to act positively in my life. So in addressing, like, some of that anger and trying to get that love for myself, and it's not that I don't love myself. You know, I do. I've learned to, like, care for who I am and to do positive things. And every day I don't, you know, there's days I look in the mirror and I don't like what I see. But then I, like, laugh it off and go about my day and do something positive for someone else. And that was something else, you know, in the triangle of self-obsession and in thinking about your anger and loving, like, the more you give to other people, the better you feel. You know, when I was also looking at this, I was thinking about how the triangle of self-obsession is me, 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 and the solution is us, us, us. Because it's so much about what I bring into the world and what I give to other people and less about who I am and how I feel, because feelings, they pass, you know? And as I, you know, I kind of mentioned already, like, I'm a really empathetic person. I feel a room when I walk into it sometimes. And I will cry at commercials, and I will cry on the drop of a dime. And many speakers today brought those tears to my eyes. And I feel too much sometimes. And that's where some of that comes from. And so in that self-care and self, like, loving myself and learning how to deal with that anger that I turn inward, today, like, I just took a walk in the woods and just, you know, breathed in the fresh air, felt the sun on my face, watch the bugs, because there's lots of bugs. I couldn't decide if this one was like one of those beetles or if it was actually a ladybug. So I decided that I was just going to believe it was a ladybug and go with that versus like thinking it was just one of those beetles that eats things and kills them. You know, and that filled me up because I had some anxiety this morning about like speaking and coming up here and talking to people. And I need to sometimes take that break because I feel so much that I take a break from like all of that and just instead of feeling emotion, feel the reality of like what's around me and feel nature. That's really important. That's also how I've learned to deal with like anger in anyday circumstances. Like when my boss pisses me off, which has happened, I do not blow up at my boss. That is not a good solution. Sometimes I might get a little snide and I try to catch it before I am. But when something comes up that I'm not ready to deal with, sometimes I've learned to even just say, I don't know what I think about that right now. I have to get back to you. Let me go think about it. And then I walk away and I go to Starbucks or I go do something like that so that I can do something for myself and think about it and come to some sort of acceptance with whatever it is that we were talking about. A lot of times it's about giving myself space to do that versus like those instant reactions that, you know, we lived off of in a way, like, let's change it right now by doing a drug. That's not possible. So I have to take those seconds to like think it through and relax and be okay with that. So fear. I had a lot of fear. Like fear is probably the thing that I, without realizing it, impacted me the most. As I mentioned, I was afraid of you. I was afraid of me. You know, for a long time, my prayer to myself was, please don't let me hurt anyone else or myself today. You know, and that's what it was because I didn't know how to be yet. It was kind of difficult. I didn't know how to have faith. I remember when I was using, and my sister is like the complete opposite of me in a lot of ways, but very similar in some ways. And she is very faithful and very religious in a sense. And she struggles with faith too. Like she has some fear in her life. And I think recognizing that even people who are so faithful have fear was really important to my recovery. Because I remember saying to her on the phone, everything in life is a leap of faith. But that also tells you how much fear I had in my life. Like every step I took to me was like a step fighting fear. It was a step saying, okay, I can do one more. I can do one more step, one more breath, one more this. When I would have a job, it would be like, I'm going to stay here 5 more minutes and then I'm out. That's it. And then when I get done with that 5 minutes, it'd be like, I'm staying another 5 minutes. And that's how I would get through some days when I just like lived in this fear of wanting to like go back and hide in my bed. You know, I did try the hide in the bed. It does not work, and I would not suggest it. You flunk some classes when you're in college, and then you like, you know, add some stuff to your fourth step. So highly don't recommend that. And I think it was like, as I started to like do those steps of waiting 5 minutes, that 5 minutes became the day at work. And I had made it through. And seeing some evidence that I didn't, something crazy, which I don't even know what I was afraid of or what I was worried about, didn't happen, made it possible to come back the next day and do it over again. You know, it made it possible to, like, feel that I was okay. One of my sponsors that I had told me something that made total sense to me, and sometimes when I say it, I know that it doesn't make sense to other people, but I still say it because it's really, it's probably one of the things that absolutely changed my perception of fear, is that nothing real can be harmed. Because I think that was my greatest fear, that in life I was going to be harmed, or something I cared about was going to be harmed, That when I tried skiing and I didn't do so well at it, that I was going to crash into a tree and it was just going to be awful. And instead of dying, I'd be like in this like hospital bed with my limbs everywhere trying to be straightened. You know, like whatever the worst thing was, that was probably what I feared. But you know what? That's a body. That's not my soul. It's not my spirit. It's not my heart. You know, having some things happen in recovery. My mother, you know, is in recovery from breast cancer. My grandmother had multiple strokes, lost her ability to really, like, have executive decisions. And then, you know, I watched her die in the hospital. Like, all of these things happened. And it was okay. I didn't combust. I didn't, like, lose my sense of self. I was able to keep going on. Partly the whole fear thing, you know, I was thinking was also this sense of, anxiety in relationships and in my daily life. Because up until, like, probably, I think it was my junior year of high school, when you looked at just the outside of me, I was like this perfect student, goody two shoes, always did the right thing. I had to be perfect because otherwise people were going to abandon me in my life. So if I wasn't perfect, someone would leave. And I, even after I started doing drugs, and like drugs were a way of letting go of that, like that need to be perfect and actually letting go of that need to be in control and like just being crazy and not wanting to hide in my bed and be able to go out of the house and all of those things, until it became the thing that took me back to my house and had me curled in a ball screaming, you know. Even like through that was kind of my need to like get rid of this. You know, okay, I can't be perfect, so I am going to just fuck up everybody's idea of who I am. Because if I can't be perfect, I might as well be the biggest fuck up in the world. Win at something, right? Like, and trust me, my mom, like, oh my gosh, every day is an amends to her. And because, you know, to go from what I was to who I am now is like a blessing, an incredible, incredible blessing. So when I started getting into some relationships, like romantic relationships, I had to be the perfect girlfriend too. Like I couldn't just be like who I was. I couldn't just laugh at crude jokes or like make my own ridiculous statements or laugh hysterically or get into fights. I never fought a single boyfriend until the guy I married. Because I had to be perfect. Like, people who are in good relationships don't get in fights, right? At least that was, like, what my crazy thinking said. Until I realized that, no, they actually do, and that's also self-love, because if he pisses me off, he better fucking know he pisses me off. And I'm going to tell him. Because that's what's going to take care of me, you know? Like, nobody, one of the things that I think I didn't realize for a really long time is that you can't see what my thoughts are. You don't know, like, if I'm upset about something you did, or you don't know if I'm, like, really want you to act a certain way. I have to actually tell you these things. You're not going to just know it. I also realized, like, through my life, that one person is not going to be everything to me. And that was also key. Because you know what? There are days that, like, I don't want to deal with myself, but then there are days that, like, in a relationship that I just, you are not enough. But that's okay. That is absolutely okay. Because you know what? I can be enough and I can fill myself. And all I'm saying is not that you're not enough in who you are, that you're not enough for what I need at this moment. And that it's okay. You know, things are not going to be perfect. No white knight is going to save me. Romance isn't going to be in the air forever. and that's okay. You know, like, I think, like, the biggest thing is, and somebody else was talking about it too, like, we're human. We make mistakes. If I expect you to never make a mistake, like I sometimes expect in myself, then I'm giving you that same awful treatment that I gave myself. And I've stopped doing that. Yes, when I make a mistake sometimes, I beat myself up, but then I go and I tell my boss about the mistake I made and I let it go. And I make the choice to do it differently in the future. I mean, my boss still says I beat myself up too much, but I'm not going to tell her that I actually let it go. I'm just going to let her believe that I, like, beat myself up too much. because that looks good, right? And that kind of, like, the same sponsor that told me that nothing real can be harmed told me that people will always fail me and God will never fail me. Now, I'm not a huge, like, God person, even though I might have said that quite a bit because we're talking about faith. Like, when I came in here, that was probably, besides my internal anger, I had a lot of anger at God, or what I thought was God, what I thought people thought I should think was God. And one of the things that I am really good at that I've also heard people say is, like, I would make things complicated. I would make it, like, I would be so introspective, and I thought that was cool. You know what? No, it's not. Because it messes with my head. It makes me, like, not able to function on a daily basis and do the next right thing when I get so deep into my thoughts that I don't know, like, up from down and right from left. Because what if left is really right, you know? So, like, I could get so trapped in my own thinking. And today it's really become about doing the next right thing, making the next right action, and showing other people the love that they deserve just as much as I deserve, showing myself that love. You know, and even when my husband's pissing me off, like, one of the things that I do, because I value that relationship and I value all the things that, you know, we are able to complement each other and the teamwork that we have in our life, I remember all the things I really love about him. Because I know that just as there are things that are going to annoy him about me, like, for instance, I like to crack my neck because it bothers me, and I know that really bothers him when I crack my neck. So I refrain from trying to refrain from doing it when he's in the room. But other things, you know, like maybe that I don't really like to cook, you know? I'm more of the, like, let's make the salad and I'll do the dishes. And he's okay with that, you know? Because none of us are perfect. None of us are going to be that, like, ideal husband or wife or sponsor, sponsee, friend, whatever it is. What recovery has given me, the joys that I have are this, this serenity and this, you know, ability to keep things much more, you know, simple. To keep it simple versus making it complicated, because it doesn't need to be complicated. You know, it's really about showing up, not using, doing what you need to do to recover, steps, home group sponsor, all of those things. And it's about learning to love yourself and love others. Like, I really think that that is key. You may not like them, as they say, but that doesn't mean that they're not just another human that's suffering on this world too, or that they didn't have a crap day and that's why they're treating you like crap. Trust me, I love servers as much as I can because I've been a server. So even if they're treating me like crap, I try to, like, how's your day going? You know, like, be, like, positive and, like, recognize that probably some asshole was in there before I was in there. And, like, just recognizing that everybody is doing the best they can at any given moment. That's all I have.
Thank you, Sarah. Our second speaker is Dane. Is he here?
Oh, no. Dennis, no.
Dennis. Okay, our second speaker is Dennis.
Howdy, name Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
I just want to start off saying it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to give back to Narcotics Anonymous anytime, anywhere. Triangle of self-obsession, the core of the disease, obsession and compulsion, and always have the disease, always have obsession. Right now I'm kind of obsessed about what is a ground beef. It's been bugging me at every meeting I've been down here. And especially if they're in the wood, why are they ground beef? Why aren't they wood beef? I know that was written by some urban committee member, probably. Anyhow, I've talked to probably about 15 people prior to this, and I brought up Triangle of Self-Obsession, just said that that was a topic that they asked me to share on, and like 13 of them said that that was the first IP that my sponsor had me read when I came here. And that was my experience too. So I'm starting to think that I've been really slacking by not having my guys read that first. And it was the first one. I mean, you know what? I really don't know if it was the first IP that I read, but it was the first one that I connected with. And the part of the IP that I connected with wasn't about pure anger, resentment, or love, acceptance, and faith. It was about that not growing up piece, about the childlike expectation for our needs to be met. It's what I call a truth punch. It was the first time, the first hard truth that I identified with in a series of thousands of them on my journey. But I started to realize that was me. I did expect that. I expected all my needs to be met. And it wasn't just like in my family. It was every relationship I was in, every friendship. I expected all my needs to be met. I had the expectation that I should be happy all the time. Things should always go my way. And if they didn't, this is fucked. What's the point? So I identified with that. And like it says in there that through the step work, we can unravel the triangle. And once I got into step work, I started identifying that stuff in my life, like the fear, the anger, and the resentment, and how that was the only thing that I felt for a long time. I mean, it governed everything about me. It governed how I felt and who I hung around with and how I responded to situations. And I'm going to share a couple important turning points in my life that started me through step work only. Do I know this? But like the fear of the anger and resentment, like the resentment for me started back when I was a kid. There was a specific time when I was probably in about the third grade or maybe fourth grade, and there was this kid who was like 2 or 3 years older than me, probably much bigger than me, and it was one of those talking shit sessions, you know, back and forth, and there was a whole crowd around, and you know, and this kid spit in my face, and I didn't do anything because I was afraid, and I looked around at the group of people standing there, and the looks on their face, it was humiliation. It was the worst thing I'd ever experienced in my life up until that point. And I kind of promised myself at that moment that I will never feel that again. And that started my resentment. And my resentment wasn't about him. I mean, for years, I still thought about him and how he needed to die. But my resentment was with me because I started believing some lies. I started taking my own bait, which is my process. I take my own bait. But I started taking the bait that, like, I'm a coward. And it became my greatest fear. There's the fear part. My greatest fear in life was that you were going to know that I was a coward. Totally unaware of this at the time. Because I identified myself as courageous. Because things that scared normal people didn't scare me. Like, I went to the other end of the spectrum in my life. Like, a couple guys today have made comments about me being this peace, love, hippie, you know. And there was a time when that was a mask that I wore, yes, but that's not who I have always been. Like, I came into Narcotics Anonymous with the worst identity crisis you can imagine. I mean, I came in straight from the hood, every color Tim's, like, you know, Sean John, like, because that was the life I lived for years before I got here, and it's just like I was a chameleon. I became my environment over and over. I wore so many masks, and the fear and the resentment that fueled all this, I totally lost any connection to who I really am. I was all about whoever I needed to be at any given moment to get what I wanted, and that wanting could just be you to like me or you to accept me. So my fears was like, I wasn't afraid of neighborhoods, incarceration, physical harm, but I was afraid of what you might think of me. Paralyzed me, guided everything that I did, everything I thought. I mean, always saying to myself, you know, what will they think if I do this? What will they think if I date her? What will they think if I wear this? And I mean, that didn't go away for a long time. In early recovery, it would take me an hour to pick an outfit out to go to a meeting. An hour. I've gotten over that. But the thing was, like, so I would have this thing going on in me that was just, it was insane. I would make all these decisions based on these imaginary people because they don't exist. It was all me and my resentment. So I would do things like I would be in a situation where I'd be laughing and having fun, and I'd look across the room and somebody be staring at me, and I would be like, what the fuck are you looking at? Like hitting a switch. In that moment, I put a thought into his head that he don't think I'm shit, and I need to like react to the thought I'm having that I put in his head. Absolutely insane. And it would end up outside over something I thought and I felt deep down inside that I wasn't even in touch with because I thought I was a courageous badass. So, I mean, that was my resentment. And so my whole life I went through this, I was lost. I was just like reality was here and I was like adrift out here somewhere thinking I had all these answers. And so the anger is how it came out. And as my disease progressed and the more and more that I stuffed this fears inside of me, the more it came out in anger. I got to the point where that people weren't allowed to hang around me. And I loved that shit. From the time I was little, I was a kid you weren't allowed to play with. I perpetuated that in every way that I could. I remember going to jail. I'd be in the paper with $1,000 reward, and I was like, yes. Like, because I thought it was some street cred bullshit. You know what I mean? So through the process, like, I went on tour with the Grateful Dead. But the whole time I was on tour, because of this fear, like, I was in love with everything that was going on. I was in love with the people hugging and being kind to each other and like no drama and everything, but my fear still had me separate from that because like I'd be buying drugs in the lot and I tell everybody, man, don't let the tie-dye fool you, I'll beat your ass. Because I didn't want to let my guard down, you know what I mean? And like just absolutely insane. So so I went through this process and it got to the point where that nobody wanted to hang around me. You know, the anger was so festering and seething inside of me that my friends would say, look, if you start drinking tequila, we're leaving you, no matter where you are, because it was a guarantee I was going to find somebody to hurt. And it was all because of my resentment with myself. All of it. And I only know this through the step work. And I got to say that because, like, Narcotics Anonymous is the 12 steps in the 12 traditions. And, like, that's why we come here. We come here to uncover the truth, like I said before, like a hard truth, that truth punch thing about that was me. I had to identify with that. And like there has been a whole bunch in the series of working through the steps. Because the whole process on the other side of the triangle are our spiritual principles that come from step work. They don't come naturally. We can't just like go meditate somewhere and become loving, accepting, and have faith. I mean, it's, you know, we could imagine it. But I mean, like I found that like for me, my spiritual process has to come from me doing a lot of things I don't want to do. There's things that I like to do that help me spiritually, but the real spiritual growth comes from doing what I don't want to do. It comes from like facing that fear and asking for help when I don't want to. Asking someone for the number. Not people writing it on a piece of paper and passing it to me in a meeting, because I've never called one of them numbers and I've never gotten a call from one. But facing my own fear and discomfort and asking someone to sponsor me, asking someone for the phone, picking up the phone and calling them, constantly facing the boundaries of my own comfort zone. The step work did that. Like writing on a step, it's never like the most convenient thing you want to do. It's never like, man, I can't wait to go home and write on my step. So what happens is in that moment, we go home and we sit down, put away all the things we want to do, and we write on our step. And it's a sincere, conscious effort. And in that moment of doing that writing, we are practicing open-mindedness, humility, faith. We're practicing all these principles on a level we don't even know we're practicing them, just by taking some direction and going against what we want to do. You know, I came in and out of this program for a long time, and I came in because I wanted to. I wanted to, the pain was bad. I wanted it to stop. I wanted to be clean. I came in here. I wanted to hang out with you guys. I wanted to drink Red Bull and play spades all night. I wanted to go to Eaton Park and drink tons of coffee. You know, I wanted to do all that stuff. But eventually, I was still stuck in that pattern of only being able to do what I wanted to do. And eventually, what I wanted to do changed. Then I wanted to go back and show everybody how good I look. Like I just come off a bit. You know, I wanted to go back and show my new car or whatever it might be. But not having those muscles to do the things that I don't want to do, I was already out there, man. So like coming in and taking direction and like working these steps and doing things that I don't want to do, no matter what I think about them, you know, no matter what I feel, because my feelings are always a disease. I was talking about this earlier. For me, my feelings is always where the disease is, because I feel this way or I don't want to feel that way. I'm chasing a feeling. I'm running from a feeling. So like I can't trust my feelings ever. I got to like look at my actions. And when I came here, it was like, tell me what to do last time. And they said, do this. And I did it. You know, 90 meetings, 90 days. Started working steps. I got involved with service immediately because, you know, that's the tradition aspect. That's the giving back. That's where the real rewards are. Like I've come to find in my journey, the steps give me a way to get past my own ego and not so self-centered. And the traditions show me how to play nice with others and how to treat people. And like, it's like a turning point. Like that's where my rewards are. I don't come to meetings. Very seldom do I come to meetings because I need a meeting. I come to meetings because I freely and lovingly give back what was freely and lovingly given to me. That's why. I'm part of this thing. Till death do us part, you know. So on the other aspect of this triangle, I have this triangle, and it still comes up. It comes up in many areas of my life. Like I'll find myself wanting, going to call a customer with a quote, and I'll just find myself stuck, like not picking up that phone, finding 50 other things to do. You know, and I know procrastination is based in fear, even though like I just feel, oh, I'm just lazy, I don't feel like it yet. What bullshit. Fear. There's a fear there. So when I face that fear, which is always my path, that's the thing. If I can identify fear, then I know where my path leads. Because I have to do that. I have to do what's uncomfortable. If I want to stay here and keep growing. And if I do something and I face it and it becomes comfortable. If I do something uncomfortable, becomes comfortable, I have to find and seek the next uncomfortable. I have to. Because, you know, I want to keep growing. This is a process that's never done. And so the opposite side of that is the spiritual principles of love, acceptance, and faith. The big one for me is love. I talk about love a lot. Because I came in here with this idea of love that was so wrong. So off base. I thought that love was when I couldn't stop thinking about you. If you came into the room, I couldn't get you off my mind. My heart would race. I wanted to have sex in every room in the house. You know, texting, calling all day long. Well, it wasn't texting. But anyhow, that's what I thought love was. I couldn't get you off my mind. And through step work, I realized at one point that's exactly how I felt about cocaine, too. Like, if it was in the room, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I wanted it all the time. And so I started connecting that my idea of love was all about obsession. That's why every relationship I was ever in, it was everything in the world to me, and then it wasn't. Yeah. And I'd say, oh, I fell out of love. No, I had no understanding of what love was. You know? And somebody earlier today talked about, like, I don't like them acronyms. The one I do like is love. Is lots of voluntary effort, because that was another hard truth for me, is that what I thought was love wasn't love, and a lot of the things that I was doing in my life was absolute manipulation. It wasn't love, and I've found that love is unconditional. If it has a condition, then it's not love. It's not. It's something else, something sick that I'm labeling love because it's getting me something that I want or attention that I want or whatever it might be. But So what I had to do was I had to painfully find out in my process what love wasn't in order to get an idea of what love was. And that idea keeps changing. The more I change, the more I look at myself, the longer I'm here, the more I understand love. And it's like, it's my higher power. It's everything, man. And like, the one thing that I found is like, my understanding of love today might have been different at 10 years clean, but at 10 years clean, if it was from the goodness of my heart and it was done with the only intention was to help somebody else, it was right in that moment at that time. Now there's the process for me, the root awakening prior to the spiritual awakening of finding out that the right thing for the right reason is not always the right reason. And that level, that onion layer is pulled back and I realize, okay, there was still some self involved there because there's always ego issues going on, whether we're aware or not. But so then I realized that, so then I have to like, again, reevaluate love. Acceptance for me is just, acceptance is, it was a process for me learning too about the difference between acceptance and just knapsacking some shit. You know, so I can pull it out and beat you in the head with it when I feel like it or I need to. Because I thought I was doing it. Oh, I accepted it. I accepted it. I accepted it. And then something would push a button and it'd be like The Exorcist, all this shit coming out, you know. But what I found about acceptance for me is that it's a process and it's a gift. Really, it does. I don't have to like everything I got to accept, but what I have to do is I have to be able to keep my serenity with that fact. If I'm losing my serenity because I can't accept something, then I'm the one that's suffering, and that's not loving to me or anybody else. And so faith is a process for me that's come over time. It started with the second step. It started with coming to believe that Narcotics Anonymous is my solution. No matter what the problem is, NA is my solution. It's not about losing the job. It's about how I react to losing the job, where I want to go back and kill everybody else. You know, it's my disease reaction to what life throws at me that's the problem all the time. It's like how somebody shared earlier, like one thing doesn't go my way and I want to take myself out. That's my problem. My problem is not that things aren't going to go my way, because they don't. The Triangle Obsession talks about that. Like, people in my life that I grew up with, they just know. They know somehow that, like, they have to practice delayed gratification. They know, like, I got to do some work today for a payoff way down the road. And I'm like, huh? Like, you know, I just don't get it. You know, that I'm going to have to, like, not all my needs are going to be met. Things aren't always going to go my way. And I'm like, why not? That sucks, you know. But that's my disease thinking. So my faith comes with the understanding that Narcotics Anonymous is my problem. Because when it talks about in the second step, where it says many of us pass over this with a minimum concern, only to find out we can't work the rest of the steps, not having worked a thorough second. And I believe that's because if we don't believe that Narcotics Anonymous is our solution, why are we going to put the effort in to stay here for the long haul? Eventually, we're going to pair out. We're not going to face what we fear and for and look at the ugly side of us and six and, you know, inventory and then practice these principles in all our affairs. We're not going to stay and do that shit if we don't believe in this, you know. And for me, the barometer is like when the shit hits the fan, when something goes wrong in my life, my instinct is to pick up the phone. Not to take somebody out, you know, not to take myself out. Pick up the phone. And call somebody. Call somebody, one of you. Share it with them, because that's the antidote to my disease thinking. And by doing that and sharing, getting outside of my disease mind, as soon as the words come out of my mouth, I can usually see it objectively as soon as I say it. And when I share it with one of you, then I can get some feedback, because we are each other's eyes and ears. And you could look at it from a different perspective than I am, and then I just increase my view. You know, and I come into a meeting and I share what's going on, and people come back and talk to me, and I'm increasing my view of this problem. Now I can see the whole way around this thing, and it doesn't have me prisoner feeling like I'm trapped in a corner anymore. There's a solution, and the solution is, like, life is gonna suck sometimes, and there's no way for it not to suck. But I don't have to get high, I don't have to make it worse, and I don't have to hurt myself. Because that used to be my solution too. I'll show you by hurting me. take that. How many times I sat on a steel bench eating a bologna sandwich thinking, yeah, I showed him. You know? So my faith, what happened was that I got a little bit of hope. I came around for a long time, in and out, and I knew people were staying clean. I knew that you had recovered. I just wasn't sure that I could have recovered. Because I was still in that process of separating myself, like someone else talked about earlier. The disease separates us, and I was still separating. I was coming in the meeting and picking out all the differences, and like, you didn't use the way I did, you know, whatever it might be, whatever bullshit lie I wanted to take, taking my own bait again. And then eventually I got to a point where that I put a little bit of trust in this thing, and like I exposed myself a little bit. I remember sharing this one time in a meeting, and there was some stuff that had me balled up a little bit, and I was like, I didn't want to share it because I grew up in the mindset of you don't ever show your hand, man. You don't ever let anybody in. You don't expose yourself. You know what I mean? You got to keep your guard up. And so I struggled with it for a little while, and then I shared this stuff in a meeting, and it wasn't a big deal, but it was real. It was from my heart, and I was terrified to share it. And when I did, I saw like 10 people nodding their heads. And I knew in that moment, man, I knew I was home. I knew Narcotics Anonymous was my home. I didn't even stay clean because I wasn't ready to live this thing yet, but I still knew this was my home. And I say this all the time. I was out promoting shit out of NA and like back houses and cheese alleys, showing people my key tags and being like, no, really, they love you there. They'd be like, shut up, man. But I knew it. I knew it because that connection was made. It was the only place in my life where I felt like I fit. Because I was so lost for so long. I had no idea who I was, but I knew it had to be wrong. I knew it had to be bad, and it needed hidden. And when I shared something, and I opened up a tiny bit, and I saw the identification, that's why it's so important how we identify in here. Mm. We identify as addicts. And like, the minute you say you're an addict, I know that. I know you, because you are me. You know what I mean? And we know the same pain and struggle and surrender and like, that's why this works, man. It's right in our text, the healing power of empathy. So I had that experience. And so having that experience, I knew I had to get back here. And eventually I did make it back here. And I came back, and this time around, man, I didn't have a treatment. I didn't have a detox. I came in angry, resentful, sick, and grinding, man. And I share every day in a meeting, man, I want that pink cloud back because I had every other time I was in treatment or whatever, and I never got it. And I'm so grateful that I never got it because I value my clean date more than anything else in life because I worked really hard to keep it. I come to meetings every day. I didn't get high. I was sick. I would share about how it sucked, and you know, and I'm still here, man. So what happens is I've had these processes, and there's been thousands of them. Thousands of like certain situations where it's worked out the best way possible. Even the stuff I didn't want to happen. In the moment, I'm like, this is the worst thing could ever happen. Oh, you know, my life is over. Fuck this shit, you know. And then a year down the road, I'm like, man, that had to happen exactly that way. And that's happened over and over again. And like, before I speak or anything, man, I don't pray for specific stuff. I don't ask my higher power, hey, can you give me this, give me courage. I just say, I reaffirm what I already know. It's been proven to me over and over. I know you got this. I know you got this. Because this is truth. And I mean, it's gotten to the level now where that it's like, I say this prayer in the morning. I say, thank you for what you've given me, thank you for what you've taken away, and thank you for what you left me, because you know better than I. To remind myself that I'm in the care of. Just like a parent. With my kids growing up, like, I didn't give them everything they wanted. They wanted chocolate for dinner. They didn't get it. They wanted to go play in traffic. They didn't do it. Because I knew better. I didn't give them what they want. And I have to just keep that mindset. Like, thank God I don't get everything I want. Because I don't know what's best for me. I really don't. I just believe that, like, I'm in the process, and it's a good thing. As long as I'm practicing love with an honest, open, good heart, trying to help people, I'm in the solution. Trying to practice principles in all my affairs to the best of my ability. Nobody is perfect at it. But it's not even about success rate. It's about the sincere effort to try again. You know, there's a meaning for the term sin. What it really means is missing the target. So like, It's just about readjusting your aim and taking another shot over and over. It's not about how many times you fall down and you fall short. It's about the sincere effort to do better today than I did yesterday. That's what recovery is all about. You know, why do we keep showing up here? We're grateful for what we've been given. It's all exercises in faith, man. And honestly, this is what I believe today. I believe that everything is okay all the time. 100% of the time, everything is okay. It's just on days when I'm spiritually fit, I can see it. On days when I'm not, my ego and my fears and the triangle comes back up, and all of a sudden, everything is fucking crazy. So like somebody else shared a little bit ago about practicing 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis, and that's the flow of this thing, man. For me and my personal recovery, like I have to live that every day. And that's why I come here. That's why I do this. That's why I take it outside of Narcotics Anonymous, and I help people in society voluntarily, because that's love. We do some great things in here for a paycheck, but that's a little different. You know? So, honor and a privilege. Glad I could fill in. All right. Love you all. Sure. All right.